kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
You could eat your dinner off of my asshole and then eat my asshole. So,
on that note, what's up, everybody? This is the SML podcast. That's staying in the show.
You know, as soon as that came out of my mouth, I was just like, I vaguely regret saying that because that's probably going to end up on the show. And
yeah.
Then you're like, that's ended up on the show. And I'm like, yeah. Fuck.
Cole, how are you doing?
I was a lot better before this call started.
You know, that said like somebody who is, you know, a little unsure of how clean her butthole is.
No, I'm just definitely never want to hear you talk about having your asshole ate ever again.
Joe okay. likes to do it with a spork.
I'm
just stab.
It's 2021 and I don't judge, but I also don't want to fucking know.
I don't want to know either. Jesus. Randall, thank you for the biddies, dropping 25 biddies in chat. We're starting off with a bang. George, take it away. Dropping bits indeed. Thank you, George. And thank you, Randall. Thank you so much. Trash Rando asks, syrup or jelly? Or the asshole eating, I presume. You know what? We don't need to get into this.
Well, personally, I prefer gotcha. Like the fake maple. I prefer like the fake. Fake like table syrup that you get at grocery stores like Hungry Jack and stuff like that. I'm actually not really much of a fan of pure maple syrup. Like it's okay in small quantities, but I don't think it spreads nearly as well on pancakes as or my beehole as
God damn it.
You know, like the Hungry Jack stuff, because you know I do want you to be a Hungry Jack. As in terms of jelly, really I'm partial to like raspberry or blackberry. That's about it. Not really much of a marmalade kind of guy.
Cole, your thoughts?
I'm not even paying attention. I'm out of here.
So, Cole, when you're eating somebody's beehole, what kind of jelly do you prefer to use?
You can't even ask that question if you ain't got the balls to say asshole.
We're trying to keep it classy, Cole.
No.
Well, no. I mean, I could say asshole, but I like the term beehole. It's kind of fun.
I don't. It sounds stupid.
It sounds like you don't have the balls to cuss.
All right.
First off, asshole is not a cuss word. I mean, at this point, we're all in our 30s. It's really not that much of a cuss word. If our target audience was like 8-year-olds, maybe. But no, we could use.
He said the A word.
Yeah, exactly. Then again, maybe people would listen to us then. I don't know.
If we geared our show towards kids?
Advertise it on some Minecraft servers, maybe.
Oh, Jesus. All right, Jeepers. Jeepers criminals.
Cheese and rice.
Cole, could you handle a PG-rated episode? I would say G-rated, but I don't think you could.
No.
Like I think maybe Cole could. No, she couldn't get by without anything.
No. See, if we keep it PG-13,
fuck one time and still be rated PG-13.
That's what I was gonna say. You know, she could say it once, but she has to choose where she's gonna say it.
And context matters. I learned that when I was researching Hamilton before the girls watched it. Which is funny because I don't censor their music or anything, but I was like, I just want to make sure it's not anything like overt. And it was like, oh, it's PG-13. I don't care. They can watch it. To be fair, 2 out of 3 of them are over 13. So I was like, I don't care.
And then you watched it 40 times.
I wish we had only watched it 40 times because that means there would still be more times to watch it where I'd be like, well, at least we haven't watched it 40 times yet.
Oh, no.
We don't just watch it a million times. Like, we listen to it in the car. We listen to it while they're doing chores, while they're doing homework. Hamilton is a big thing in this house.
Cole, I'd like to say, as the parent, you do get to decide what gets played in the car.
I know. I purposely decide to listen to Hamilton.
So I'm not. You can't blame the kids. Gee, you're just as guilty as them.
No, I never said it in any kind of way that we were blaming them. I was like, you know, the only reason I wish we hadn't watched it 40 times is because we could still say we hadn't at least watched it 40 times yet.
Okay, we're not getting on a Hamilton kick. Every time Hamilton comes up, you just go on a nice long tangent of Hamilton.
Do I?
You do. When Hamilton comes up, you go on tangents.
I mentioned that I watch it a lot.
Yeah, that comes up a lot. And then you talk about the music and then talk about the songs. You know what? We're doing this. We're doing this. It's happening. God damn it. It's happening.
I want to be in the room where this happened. There. Now I talked about a song. Get fucked.
Oh, my God. All right. We got news to talk about. There was a lot of news this week. We talked about it on the last episode with David Ventura. But we got to talk about it this week as well. Microsoft officially pissed off the world by raising the price of Xbox Live Gold. On the surface, it looked like it was a minor increase. When you looked at all the details, it was a massive increase. On the same day, Microsoft course corrected and reverted the pricing changes. And they are also going to be unlocking free-to-play games to no longer need the gold requirement in the coming months sometime. Mm-hmm. So, Cole, I know you and I talked about this with David, but Jacob, what are your thoughts on this whole situation?
I would like to say the best part is that if you look at the SML, I don't remember if I posted it on Twitter or Facebook. I completely missed the news story because they rolled out the Xbox Games with Gold for February the same day. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just like, oh man, what a lineup. And I didn't even comment on like the whole pricing. I didn't even know about it till after it was done and they'd already reverted back. And I'm just like, why is everyone so mad at Microsoft? February's looking solid. Like, and then I read the articles. It's like, oh, huh.
Oh, they fucked up big time. Wow.
Yeah, that was bad. I mean,
again, on the surface, it didn't look horrible. It was a 1 month increase from $9.99 to $10.99. Three months went from $24.99 to $29.99, which I didn't think was horrible. And then they announced that 6 months would be $59.99, which is what 1 year was. And the 1 year option was gone.
It was horrendous.
Yeah.
And the other thing was, is that it was like, it was an obvious ploy to just try to get everyone to sign up for Game Pass Ultimate,
mm-hmm.
or whatever the heck it's called. The thing I'll never have, probably.
You should. It's only 15 a month, and it's worth every
because
penny.
Because at that point, like 1 year of just Xbox Live Gold was $60 less than just getting Game Pass Ultimate. And it's just like, oh, well, if that's the case, then I'm just going to do that. Like, so, I mean, obviously, that's what they were trying to do. When I first heard that they were, like, bumping up the prices, I didn't know the price point. But I was just like, oh, well, it's been $60 since as far back as I can remember. That makes sense if they bump it to like 70 or something. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't expect it to like be paying for the same service like and keep getting better quality without them. I mean, we could because it's Microsoft and they print money. But it's just like I got it. And then I read the details and I was like, they done fucked up.
Yeah. If they would have done something like 6 months for like $49.99 and a year for $69.99, I think people would have been okay with the change. But
yeah, even if it was just like a $10 increase or a $20 increase for like a 12 month, everyone just would have been like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Like, but doubling the cost effectively to go from, you know, 6 months for $60 instead of a year for $60, that was stupid.
That was bad.
Cole, you want to chime in or are you like playing something?
No, I'm not playing anything. I'm just kind of listening and reading chat and I'm existing.
Chime in. You're part of the show, you know.
Yeah, but I voiced opinions and stuff on this when we had guests talking about it. So I feel like there's not really a whole lot of points to rehash out. If you want to know
Cole's opinion, listen to the last episode,
Jackal. Yeah.
Get our viewer ratings up.
I already did this, you fuckers. Keep up with the conversation.
Yeah. Joe, think of all the emotional labor you're making Cole having to redo her, you know, opinion again for another episode. What the
relive
hell,
man? This scenario, what this hell? Nightmare scenario.
I was so fucking tired. By the end of the day, every time I saw Xbox trending and what it was trending for, I was just like, I'm so fucking tired of seeing that on my trending. Mm-hmm. And literally nothing else could happen. Like, it was the first time I was like, could Trump just tweet something stupid? Oh, right. Because I was just so fucking tired of seeing it. And I also, it feels moot for me to be like, oh, well, here's my opinion on how much it costs when I haven't paid for it in like 5 years.
True. You and your code and winning.
I won't be paying for it for the next two. So it's not fair for me to have a dog in that fight.
Okay, then no opinion for you. We're going to move on. Jacob, you mentioned the games with gold for February. And it's a pretty nice lineup. Xbox seems to be bringing it this month.
So fucking tight. Dude, I'm excited for February.
On Xbox One for the entire month of February is Resident Evil and Gears 5.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm just like, cool, so I just only have to pay for the DLC. Like, hooray.
Wouldn't Gears 5 have any DLC meaningful DLC? 3. Yeah, I think it's just like skins and shit. I want the Terminator
stuff.
Oh, okay.
I just want the Terminator stuff. That's it.
Mm.
I was going to say, I thought everything else was free.
I don't know.
It's like all skins and stuff that you got to buy. It's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But February 16th through March 15th is Dandara Trials of Fear Edition, which is also the free game on Epic this week.
Yeah, Dandara is fantastic. It's a great game, but it's incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
I struggled with it so bad. But it's definitely going to appeal to, like, the Dead Cells Messenger gameplay kind of crowd.
Yeah. But it's a good addition. Backward compatibility lineup. February 1st through the 15th, Indiana Jones and the Emperor's Tomb, which I'm super excited about. It's one of the few backward compatible games I don't own, so that'll be nice. And then the latter half of the month is Lost Planet 2.
Okay. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
None so of them is. Are I, like, I thought it was three. But, you know, I don't think either I've way, played I don't own any it, of so. Them. 9 times out of 10, because I didn't buy a whole lot of games on the Xbox. I always just get the games with gold games, and I'm like, well, that's going into the backlog of Doom. And if I ever have 20 hours free, I might actually play it. I never have 20 hours free.
No, no one does.
I barely have 20 minutes free.
Well, then let's speed along with this news. PlayStation Plus for February. They saw Xbox bring it, and they were like, hey, fuck you, Xbox. We're going to bring it, too. And they really brought it. PlayStation 4 gets Concrete Genie, which has bonus modes on PSVR. PS4 and PS5 get Control Ultimate Edition.
That is a big one.
And then PS5 gets Destruction All-Stars, which is launching direct to PS Plus.
Okay. I'm not familiar with that one.
That's the car combat game that was supposed to be a launch title.
Oh!
The full price one. Okay. And then they're like, oh, we're going to make it PlayStation Plus. And everyone was like, oh, that's what you should have done from the beginning.
All right, then. I remember that one now.
Well, yeah, that's what's happening. So, Destruction All-Stars, Control Ultimate Edition, and Concrete Genie. Awesome lineup for PlayStation Plus. I'm excited. I don't own any of those on PlayStation, so awesome for me.
Nice. Yeah.
Win-win-win.
You definitely cleaned up.
Jacob, any thoughts?
Not really, no.
Good, helpful. You're doing awesome.
Well, I mean, it's PlayStation. What am I going to do?
Chime in with an opinion, you dick.
I like Mike's Harder Cranberry.
Okay, then. Project Winter was supposed to release on Game Pass this week. Hit a delay. It will now release on Game Pass on February 4th. This looks to be for people who are into Among Us.
Yes. There's, I mean, Among Us is the biggest one of those titles right now, but there's actually quite a few games in that genre. Like, I remember playing Town of Salem on browser. Mm-hmm. So it was a flash game. So, I mean, I remember playing games like that as a kid when in smaller, not online multiplayer type of situations, but yeah, it's an interesting genre, and I like it, and I'm looking forward to Project Winter.
Cool. Hopefully we'll hear more about that one. It's from Other Ocean. We have friends there, so it's cool to see them releasing that.
Mm-hmm.
Some weird news. Vicarious Visions was fully merged into Blizzard and will work exclusively on Blizzard projects moving forward. Vicarious Visions, of course, known most recently for the Tony Hawk 1 and 2 remaster, which got tons of praise. Mm-hmm. They've worked on tons of properties over the years. It's weird to see them gobbled up by Blizzard.
That's really surprising. Damn.
I mean, they were owned by Activision Blizzard to begin with. It's just weird to see them folded into Blizzard instead of working on the Activision side like they've been doing. I don't know. They're also allegedly working on a remake of Diablo 2, so I'm sure Chris Huber is losing his mind at that.
I was going to say, that got rumored a few weeks back, if I remember correctly.
That's been rumored for so long.
Oh. Well, maybe it finally got like, yeah, that's what we're doing.
This is just more fuel to the fire, I guess. Tencent is acquiring a majority stake in Clay Entertainment, who are known for Don't Starve and Shank. So Tencent getting another company.
Another. And another one. Tencent just gobbles up stakes in fucking everybody.
They do. They're a busy company. Yeah, Mark of the Ninja. There's another good one from Clay. Thank you, Trash Rando. Biomutant finally got a release date of May 25th. So if that one's been on your wish list, finally has a concrete release date. Been so long since it's been announced, I kind of forget what it's about.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't even know what the hell it was until they gave like a release date for it. And I was like, oh, why should I care about this?
I don't think I have any idea what you're talking about.
It's from THQ Nordic. So.
Okay.
Hopefully we'll get it. Yeah, I'm Googling it right now.
Proud of you. What are you finding?
Post-apocalyptic kung fu fable with unique martial arts styled combat system allowing to mix melee shooting and mutant ability action. Can I request that we get a review copy? Because that'd be pretty banging.
This sounds cool. We're not discussing that on the show. Zen Studios announced Pinball FX, a next gen pinball title that will feature an all new career mode, challenges, a clan system, and get this, Pinball Royale.
What?
Yes, a multiplayer battle royale pinball mode.
No.
It is set to release sometime later this year on Series X and S and PS5. We'll hear more about that in the future, and hopefully we could get the Zen guys on to chat about it.
Sounds good.
Ninja Theory has come out and confirmed there will be no more content updates for Bleeding Edge because nobody plays it.
I saw a YouTube comment the other day that was like, Bleeding Edge is my favorite game, and I hope they fix this or that. And I'm like, come the fuck on. Literally nobody says that for real. I keep forgetting it even exists, and I love Ninja Theory.
Polygon saying it's shut down.
What, Bleeding Edge?
Yeah, I'm checking the...
No, they said that the game should still be up and playable.
I think it's a misleading headline.
No.
Yeah, that's weird. Okay.
Champions. Proud of them. But yeah, they're going to be focusing on Hellblade 2 and what is it, Project Mara? Is that the other one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's Project Mara.
Mara.
You always want to pronounce it Mara, and that sounds so odd to me.
I'm bad at pronouncing things. Heaven Smile, can't wait for Bleeding Edge 2.
I don't think we're ever going to get that.
Wish in one hand.
Spit in the other. See, I can be PG. I can be PG. That's what I told my kids until they were old enough for me to say shit in the other.
Last bit of news that I have is that word has come out that Square Enix and Don't Nod have parted ways, and Deck Nine will be handling all games related to Life is Strange from here on out.
I have mixed feelings about this because I want Don't Nod to get gobbled up by Microsoft and get taken under their wing. But I don't want them to lose the Life is Strange universe. And I think that's basically just that's there's no two ways about it. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it is what it is, but I really wanted them to get to retain that universe. Deck Nine, I don't want to say they don't do a good job with Life is Strange, but there's obvious differences. And I didn't care for how they took Before the Storm. It's fine. I'll end up playing them, and I'll end up following Don't Nod into whatever the fuck realm they go into and whatever they continue to make, because I love what they do as well. So I don't know why I even care, because it just gives me more shit to play. Yeah. Bring it on. Do it. Go for it. Whatever.
And then I guess big news of the week, Jacob, I know this is something that you wanted to talk about, but the stock world has gone crazy this week because of GameStop and Reddit.
Yeah.
I don't understand stocks, so I don't understand what the hell's going on. All I know is I really wish I owned GameStop stock a month ago.
Pretty much everyone is wishing that right now. But at this point, it's a little too late to be buying it.
Yeah.
Well, there's still AMC and Nokia and BlackBerry mm-hmm. that they're trying to squeeze out
nope.
too.
Nope. I could get into that in a moment, Cole.
That was yesterday. I haven't paid any attention to it today because, again, it's all that's showing up on my trending. And to be fair, I'm kind of just fucking tired of reading it. When you have like click it syndrome and you click and read everything, when it's the same news story and a cycle on every platform constantly for 4 days straight, you're just like, I'm going to murder somebody just so there's a new story to read.
Hold on. So are you saying I could just send you links and you'll click on them?
Within reason. I'm fairly like, I don't have any shame.
You can probably see through my treachery.
Yeah, I already like, I have a extension on my browser that shows me a preview of what the link is before it comes up. So good luck, but it's well, fun, again, but it also might still ruins force you to see the stuff.
Photos. So
well,
I might try this later on. Have you heard of Goatsy.cx?
Oh, Jesus, are you going to talk about stocks or
yeah?
You dick, you awful, awful human.
You gotta step up your troll game, though, because I used to work for a search engine.
You used to look at GoatSeeds.cx all the time?
Ew, no, listen.
Cold. You are disgusting.
I worked for a search engine, and all those lame-ass, something-awful 4chan trolls would pop into there, because, like, people would come on the chat, and they would tell you what they were looking for. So, like, if you knew the lyrics to a song, but you didn't know the song, it was our job to find it for you.
Okay.
And like people would come in there and like ask for Goatsy and Tub Girl and shit like that. Like none of that shit surprises me. You're not going to get me with any of that. You got to step up your game if you're going to try to get me to land on a website that's going to bother me.
Fair enough. All right. So going into the stocks. So up on a Reddit board, which it's called Wall Street something. I forget what the heck
Wall
it
Street
was.
Bets.
Wall Street Bets. And essentially what happened is a couple of weeks ago, this guy started organizing a bunch of people to suddenly invest in GameStop because they were realizing that this hedge fund was trying to short it and just make money off of GameStop, not making money.
Basically,
and
shorting it. Yeah, shorting it is the idea that you put a bet against it and bet that it's going to bomb within a few years.
So, right. Even
if even a few years.
If even, like, even, if even a few years. So,
yeah.
Cole gave a very, like, short explanation of it. But essentially what it is that, and it's not just funds that could do this, a regular person like you or I could do this. You go to investment broker or holding house, and essentially you're just like, oh, well, I want to, you know, I want like 100, I want you to loan me like 100 shares of GameStop, which are currently, like, let's say they're selling for $50 a share. Okay. So they loan it to you. It's like being loaned money from a bank. Okay. So eventually you're still going to have to cough up that 100 or 500, whatever shares, the 100 shares of GameStop stock. You're eventually going to have to give that back to them. And so what you do, all right, it's at $50 a share. Cool. So you go off and sell it. So currently you're negative 5,000 in the hole, or, yeah. So, what you're eventually doing is that when you're trying to short this is that you're waiting for the stock price to go down enough that you're going to be able to pull a decent sized profit off of this. And then you go back to the clearinghouse and you're like, here's your 100 shares after you've bought like an extra 100 shares. So like, let's say you initially bought it at $50 a share. Okay. Sold them. And then you're waiting and you're waiting and you're waiting and you're waiting. And then, like, let's say GameStop's only selling at $5 a share. Okay. You buy up that 100 shares for $5 and then you give it back to the holding house. So you've now made a profit of $45 per share on that. Joe, is that a better explanation for you?
Kind of, but I still really don't care about stocks.
No. I get it. No. I tried to explain this to Joe like the other day with a couple of clips from The Big Short, and he was just like, I still don't, like, whatever.
Why is Anthony Bourdain talking to me? Like, what the fuck is this movie doing?
It's pretty great. And actually, my wife was like, oh, you should have shown her the Selena Gomez clip. And I was like, ah, yeah, I should have. And so that's essentially what happens when these people short out the stocks. And so what happens with this is that by all these people from Reddit, like these thousands and thousands of people suddenly buying all these shares of GameStop, it causes the price to go up. And so what was happening with this one hedge fund is that they were suddenly like $12 billion in the hole because they had bet all, like, they had made this insane bet that GameStop's shares were just always going to remain low and that they would never have to pay back all this. And then all of a sudden GameStop is trading at like 300, you know, odd dollars a share. And this company got supremely fucked. And they ended up getting like a $2.5 billion loan from somebody else.
They lost several billion dollars in the course of
their entire worth.
Yeah, exactly.
And so everyone's like, so everyone on Reddit is like, aha, hooray, we're doing this, you know, good on us. And so they started aiming at other stuff, AMC Theaters, BlackBerry, Dogecoin, the cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. And Wall Street's reaction has been pretty swift to this. So you have apps like E-Trade and Robinhood, which aren't allowing you to buy these stocks anymore. You can only sell them if you have them in your portfolio.
Which, if you're selling them, who's buying them if you can't buy?
Doesn't matter.
Like, I know. That's the point, though. Like, they're like, oh, you can
That's part of the problem, though, because that's preventing consumers from being able to make their own financial decisions.
Yeah.
So the SEC is investigating whether anything, you know, bad has happened with this. And initially, they were just kind of like, it's people doing trading. Like, there's not much that we can do. However, they're still going to investigate it. And apps like, you know, as I said, Robinhood and all them, they've halted trading on these stocks. So I believe GameStop is currently sitting at like $160 a share right now, which is still hell of a lot better than, you know, $5. but the dangerous thing about this is that it eventually will stop. Like, you know, the stock is not just going to keep going and going all the way up to the Amazon or Alibaba prices. Like, it's eventually going to crash. And so hopefully the people who aren't on Reddit aren't investing like their whole life savings on this, or if they are, they're hopping out like now. Yeah. While these, you know, so GameStop got in the news for all the wrong reasons, essentially. So
good stuff.
Yeah, and if you care more about this, I've been updating the Facebook page pretty regularly with this. So, yeah, so if you care to know more.
So for all the people that don't follow us on Facebook.
Well, start following us on Facebook.
We're on Facebook. Check the description below the video if you're watching this on YouTube. And there's links. You could, like, click on them. We're on Twitter and Facebook, and you could visit us and talk to us and do stuff like that.
I mean, I don't know who'd want to, but, you know.
I know.
Honestly, I think our Facebook page is pretty solid. I mean, I keep it pretty well updated with news articles and shit posts, so.
News articles. Right, in quotes, news articles.
I will say, shit got unruly enough that it forced John Stewart to join Twitter and weigh in.
Yeah, I saw that. John Stewart finally made a Twitter account.
About the whole GameStop thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, he just made a Twitter, I think today, just a few hours ago. Like, his first words are like, it's bullshit.
basically, that, you know, the apps have shut down people being able to participate in the free market.
Mm-hmm. Only rich people are allowed to be rich. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Stop trying to make it happen, poor people. You're not supposed to be anywhere near money. So knock the fuck off.
So that's pretty much all I have on the whole GameStop news. So
Cole, anything else you want to chime in on or any other news you want to talk about? Or should we dive into reviews?
Oh, I've got other news.
Oh, you have more news? Son of a bitch.
Why do we let him come on here?
All right, what other news you got?
Well, EA opened up a new studio called Full Circle, and it's pretty much just going to be working on the new Skate game.
Which Chris Huber, again, is fully erect at that news.
Isn't Chris Taylor also into those?
I don't know if Chris Taylor
for some reason.
Huh? I'm pretty sure Ecubus is.
Oh. Well, yeah, and EA has said two of the creators of the original games are joining Full Circle, so hooray for that.
Nice.
Netflix is going to be doing a Tomb Raider anime. I don't know if you guys find that.
Crickets. No?
Pointy chins.
Pointy
anime chins.
Okay. Not a big anime.
I hate anime chins.
Hold on, the quick. Tell that news story again.
What about Netflix? Doing a Tomb Raider anime? Okay. Are you putting in a sound that I can't hear right now?
No, I told you to just say the news again.
Oh, why?
Fucking do it!
Because I want to make fun of you and mock you, you piece of shit. What other news do you have?
Factor 5 has come back.
What?
Yeah. I don't even know what that is.
They made the Rogue Squadron games back in the day.
Wow. Oh,
that is
when?
Factor 5 is back. Apparently, they actually didn't die. Only their U.S. Side died, but the one that was running out of Eastern Europe over in Cologne, they stayed open, and they worked on a lot of like video-on-demand services and stuff. Like they stayed away from video games, but they were still there. And they're coming back to make video games.
What are they going to make?
Some property called Turrican. Apparently it was big back in the day. I'm not familiar with it at all.
I am. Chris Taylor will probably be excited at that news, but
yeah. So, okay. So essentially with Turrican, the rights ended up with THQ back when they died. And then, when THQ was getting themselves out of bankruptcy, they sold, Factor 5 got in touch with them about the rights to Turrican, and they were like, THQ was just like, yeah, we're not going to do anything with it. Here you go. And so they just sold it to them. So Factor 5 is coming back and they're going to work on that.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never thought Factor 5 would be back after Lair on the PS3 that just murdered that company.
Yeah. Well, that and a bunch of other projects that just never took off.
Yeah, but Lair was the big
one. Did you know gaming has actually a pretty good video on like the death of Factor 5?
Might have to look that up. Cool. What else? So,
they've announced that the Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga is going to have 300 different characters that you can play as well as making different improvements to the Lego style of gameplay, which Lego themselves, or not Lego, but, oh God, I'm blanking.
TT Games.
Thank you. I was just like, what does TT Games stand for?
Traveler Tales.
Yeah, thank you. Pretty much they admitted themselves that the Lego franchise has gotten stale.
Well, it's been the same engine for how long? So I know they're working on a new engine for this game. It's supposed to be that you could tackle all of the movies in any order that you want. So you could jump around as much as you want. So I'm excited to see what they do, but I'm also worried that it's going to be too much. I miss the simplicity of the older Lego games.
Honestly, it's... You know, it's weird because, like, I've started playing, Lego Star Wars with Sam, my oldest son. And I'll tell you what, like, I forgot this. Like, it's just weird playing all these Lego games because it's just like so many of them. It's just getting through an entire level is such a slog. It's like these things are like they're aimed at kids, yet none of these, like, so many of these levels are like 45 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And it's just they don't have. You know, and that's like with like an adult playing them, like just playing it with my kid, like with Sam, he's just like, oh, can we play a Lego Star Wars level before bed? And I'm like, no, dude, because you're going to take an hour and a half. Like, you know, get good, scrub.
but dunking on your kid.
No, I don't say that to him. I'm just like, yeah, dude, it's just
you should. That's positive reinforcement.
No, but it's just like, like the original Lego Star Wars, it's just like, and the fact that you can't save anywhere, it's just like, oh my God. And like the Marvel games, like those, they're just as bad. And they came out like a few years ago. Like, yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of changes they make with that. So there's that. IO Interactive is going to double its staff and open a second studio, and the studio's just going to focus on James Bond because they have the rights to it.
Interesting.
And apparently this is going to be a new James Bond. We're going to see this James Bond's origins in their upcoming game, which is big news because obviously it's never really been explored. So... Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like you're just scraping the bottom of the barrel for news at this point.
Ouch. All right, fine. Rumor has it Capcom is redoing its plans for the Resident Evil 4 remake.
Did we talk about that last week?
I think so.
I don't remember.
You did? I think you bitched at me because I was like, oh, I haven't played that one.
Yeah, you need to play Resident Evil 4.
Yeah,
well, I guess I'm going to get a chance when it's remade.
We've got some movie news. Sonic the Hedgehog 2 is going to start filming in March in Vancouver and Hawaii. So, hooray. Vancouver is also where they filmed all the scenes for Montana. So, likely we're going to still be in Green Hills for part of it.
All right.
Kevin Hart got hired on to play Roland for the Borderlands movie.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Roland is too serious of a role, in my opinion, for Kevin Hart.
I don't know. We'll see how they handle it. It could work.
Also, he's taller.
Yeah, true.
Honestly, if they had made Kevin Hart Claptrap, I would have been like, yeah, that makes sense. he's been solid in the Jumanji movies, so you know, maybe that's where they're coming from on this. So
I don't know.
Yeah, and final news, because I know you want me to wrap this the fuck up. CD Projekt Red is asking people to stop having sex with Keanu Reeves. So, essentially, what it is that there has been a mod out there that lets you, that swaps out the regular male prostitute model with Johnny Silverhand. And CD Projekt Red has put a kibosh on that from being listed in the official mods thing, and they're asking you, please just don't do it. Mostly, and their reasoning is that it's because it's based on Keanu Reeves, and he's an actual person. So it's like, you know, if you want to have sex with somebody else in the game, have at it, just not Keanu Reeves.
Makes sense. Still funny.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely funny. So, yeah, that's all I'm going to torture you with on news today.
All right, Cole, anything else, or are you ready for reviews?
Let's review shit. I was ready like 27 minutes ago, but here we are.
All right, well, Jacob, I know you got to get moving, so we'll do yours first. The first game to talk about is called Redout Space Assault, developed and published by 34 Big Things, released January 22nd on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $9.99. Redout Space Assault is an arcade space battler, coupling the trademark Redout adrenaline with the thrill of combat. Outsmart, outmaneuver, outpower, outclass your opponents in lightning-fast, adrenaline-inducing single-player space combat. Jacob, tell us about Redout Space Assault.
It's honestly a weird title. First off, I'd never played any of the Redout games before, and I think there's only one other one. And essentially, it's a racer, mm-hmm. Racing game set in space. So this is not a racing game. First off, there's a plot going, and it's just like, oh well, you know, you're part of this military group and you're protecting these outposts, and like it tries to give some backstory through each of the missions and stuff like that, but it's standard sci-fi fare. It's generic stuff. And at first the game holds your hand and makes it seem like it's going to just be an on-rails shooter, which I was like, okay, that's fine, whatever. I'm fine with that. And then all of a sudden on this one mission, it just switches it up. It's like, yeah, you're allowed to fly wherever. And it's like, oh, you didn't warn me about that now that I've crashed into an asteroid field and and my ship exploded. But thank you. I'll have to restart the mission. And so I do it. And I'm just like, okay, so maybe the game just wanted to hold my hand, you know, for the first couple of missions to get me used to firing weapons, I guess. And then the very next mission, I'm back on rails again. And I'm just like, oh, why can't I move? Okay. So the game just keeps switching it up between that. And on top of it, like so with a lot of space sims and stuff like that, you have like your main objective and you have like a couple of side objectives. And the side objectives for this game are usually just like, you know, don't take any hits, don't blow up, which, you know, if you don't take any hits or if you don't blow up, then you probably haven't, you know, you get what I mean. Or it's just like, oh, we'll finish it under a certain amount of time. Or in the terms of like the one where that wasn't on rails, it was like, you need to collect all three blueprints instead of just one. But then like when I played it, I collected one blueprint and then the game just ended the mission immediately. And I'm just like, well, how was I supposed to collect all three? Good question, apparently. And so the game introduces, at first, all you have are your missiles, and then you're eventually given other weapons to use, and you can upgrade things. The upgrade menu is confusing as hell, and I'm pretty sure that you're only actually able to upgrade one thing at a time. Like, so you can either upgrade your ship's hull, your shields, your weapon, or your missiles. And so I'd go to select something, and then it's just like, oh, you wanted to, like... So I'd pop in like a couple on missiles and then be like, oh, well, I should update my hull too. And so I select hull to update. And then it's like, oh, hey, you want to update your missiles? Cool. And then it spends my 500 credits. And I'm just like, no, that's not what I said. And like, you can't get out of the menu. It's just your stuff is updated.
Weird.
That's it. Yeah. And the thing is, like, the missions are easy enough that you can go back and replay them a couple of times. And then, like, then... whatever, just update it then. Then like the next time that you have like 500 credits to spend. But then, you know, it's a little convoluted and I wish they would have explained that. And then you just move through the missions. Like, I'll tell you, like, the graphics are gorgeous. I thought they looked pretty beautiful. Everything's well detailed. The controls are a little hinky, but for a $10 game, you know, I was generally cool with it. But I wish the game explained itself a little bit more. And while it's not the best ride out there in terms of a spaceflight thing, I mean, Star Wars Squadrons obviously has it beat, but like, this is like two different leagues really for comparison.
Yeah, that's apples and oranges.
it really is. I don't want to say that this game feels like a cell phone game that got popped over to Xbox, but it kind of has those vibes. It's enjoyable, but I don't know. I feel like it definitely needs some polish in terms of gameplay and explanation of what you're doing. And, you know, even just the thing of like, this is going to be on rails. This is exploration. Like, some kind of heads up ahead of time for each mission would have been nice. But for $10, it's pretty solid. If you like your space sims, I'd recommend it for a $10 game. Otherwise, you might want to try it. I don't know if this is on Game Pass or anything like that. But,
no.
No. Well, hopefully you have a friend that owns it.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
But your official verdict?
For $10, yeah. It's a buy it.
Cool. All right, next game is Butterfly, developed by Grin Robot, published by Zetalon, released January 27th on Xbox One for $4.99. Platformer puzzle game with an interesting gimmick. You can't jump, so you need to bounce off your enemies or use tubes to your advantage. Both platformer skills and logic are required to complete 40 challenging levels. Deft fingers and quick reactions are required. Sweaty neck guaranteed. Jacob, tell us about this one.
Wait. You gave Jacob a game that requires logic?
Burn.
Yeah.
Why?
Because he loves me more? I don't
know. Oh, God. I just tell us about Butterfly.
All right. So, pretty much, this is a...
Now he's all fucked up and can't do it.
All right. So, pretty much, oh, like, you're like done. This little caterpillar guy. And as you know, as you said, you can't jump. And so, you have to plan out your moves on each level, and there's these like little bees that are floating around, and you have to like plan your jump so you land on top of them, which then extends your bounce, and then you move all over the place. There's going to be some trial and error with it. It's an extillion.
I say Zetalon. I don't know.
Zetalon. Yeah. It's a Zetalon game. So you're going to be getting your 1,000 points pretty early in the game, pretty much within the first 10 levels. The game itself, I kind of like it, although the graphics look like they are like Windows 3.1.
Yeah, it's not the prettiest level. Game at all.
Not the prettiest looking game is a very nice way of putting it. it has like early 90s. You know, as I said, Windows 3.1 graphics going for it. As a puzzle game, it's pretty good. I really enjoyed it. And as frustrating as, you know, a couple of the levels could be, you know, within a couple of other tries, you know, you figured it out. So it's a good way to pass the time. The achievements are kind of broken. So pretty much what was happening is
I ran into this too. So it's not just you. I ran into the broken achievement thing as well.
Yeah. So it's happening, you know, on Xbox One and Series X. So pretty much what was happening is that it's just like I complete a level and the achievement wouldn't unlock. And so if you look at my achievements, my very first achievement for this game is level 7, even though levels 1 through 10 all have achievements attached to it. And it's the damnedest thing, too, because pretty much, like, let's say that you're like, okay, well, I'm at level 7, you know, hooray for me. I'm going to go off and, you know, play this game another day. When you come back, none of the other achievements will unlock. You pretty much have to start up a new game to get anything, like, any of the achievements to unlock. And even then, that wasn't, like, a sure thing. And so, again, if you look at my achievements for this game, they are all out of order. And it took me, I think, 5 playthroughs to finally get all 10 achievements.
They weren't that broken for me. I played through a couple of the levels the first time I played the game, and I noticed nothing was popping, so I just dashboarded, quit the game, started it back up, and everything worked fine. And I got my levels 1 through 10, which, by the way, there's only 10 achievements.
So far.
yeah, so far. Wait for the title updates. This is going to be another easy 1,000, so if you're into those, I'm sure you already own this game.
Yeah. So
it's going to be one of those where you drop $5, you get easy achievements. It's a fun game.
If you're looking for easy achievements, or, you know, a decent chill puzzle game, this is a good place to look. As we said, it is not a pretty looking game, but it gets the job done.
Saying Windows 3.1 is so accurate.
Yeah.
It has that style to it.
It kind of looks like somebody who was very proficient with MS Paint.
Well, overall verdict for $5.
I already said, if you're looking for easy achievements or like a chill puzzle game, yeah, $5, absolutely. If you were looking for missed level graphics on this, that dog don't hunt.
Why is mist your bar for graphics?
Oh, God. It's like mist for what? For puzzle games? For that kind of stuff. I just remember it blowing my mind when I was, Jesus, like what? 11-ish? And it's always stuck with me. It's always just been top tier for me. Like, I mean, I know that there's obviously prettier games out there like Portal and stuff like that, but I don't, that point when CD-ROM became affordable for everybody, like, it just, that was it. That was the pinnacle. Like, it's kind of like Wing Commander 3 or 4 for Flight Sims. I mean, which are great games in their own right, but it's just, there was nothing like it at that time in terms of PC gaming. Like, all that shit that ended up on CD-ROM, like, hell yeah. Like, they did amazing shit compared to what you were doing with floppies, like, 2 years previous.
Floppy disks. God damn.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that's it for you. I guess we'll kick you the hell on out of here.
Whoa.
Oh, God. You want to talk about Loot Hero DX, don't you?
We got Loot Hero DX to talk about.
All right. We talked about this last week on the show.
No, we don't do that shit without you. Because you were a bum.
hey, it is not my fault that my house is my furnace blue.
All right, Loot Hero DX, developed by, I don't remember, published by Rattlelake Games. Tell us about your thoughts on Loot Hero DX.
Honestly, it was a ton of fun. I really enjoyed just, like, ramming through all the different enemies and, like, you know, occasionally I would die. It didn't happen too often. But it was a lot of fun just, like, updating my hero and then just, like, trying to ram through all the different levels and stuff like that, running back, collecting coins, running back. You know, just a grind. Like, it was one of the few times I've actually enjoyed grinding in a video game. And I think it's just because there was enough to do to keep my interest. And then you just run through the levels and then, you know, boom, you've killed the dragon. And I kind of appreciate how the game kept its statistics on stuff. It's just like, congratulations, you have defeated the dragon 5 times. Like, and then you just go back at it and do it some more. And it's slightly more difficult each time. I dug the hell out of it. Like, it's still sitting on my Xbox, which not a lot of, like, these indie games that I review, not a lot of them get to stick around. But this one, it's going to be there for a while. It kept my attention. I really enjoyed it. How much does it cost?
$5.
Hell yeah. $5? Definitely get it. I mean, it's not on my game of the year list. But definitely get it.
It's not?
It's January.
There's still exactly. Time. What else have you played in January? Exactly. So far, Loot Hero DX is Jacob Garner's game of the year.
that is an excellent award. Game of the year so far.
Game of the year as of January 2021. Can you see why we didn't need to discuss this game 2 weeks?
you know what? Whatever. I wanted the ability to be like, yo, Jacob Garner talked about Loot Hero DX. So,
well, you're going to have to tweet about it because it's not going in the write-up.
You bitch.
It's like a minute long. What do you expect?
And your wife has heard the same.
She has.
It's a minute long. Man. What do you expect?
Jacob, do you have any final words before we let you go?
Nah, not really.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye. Good.
Bye.
Paul, no final words to Jacob?
Nope, I was just waiting for him to fucking go. Yeah, shit to do. Let's go. Top, top.
All right, next game to talk about is The Dark Eye Memoria, developed and published by Daedalic Entertainment, released January 27th on Xbox One, PS4, and Switch for $19.99. In Memoria, players travel through different time periods following two distinct protagonists, Saja, a southern princess who wants to be a war hero, and Geron, a birdcatcher who wants to lift a curse from his girlfriend. Hopefully I said those names right. Cole, I'm sure you could tell me if I fucked them up.
Yep. Actually, I played with the volume down quite a bit, so I'm not even sure how they were pronounced.
Osaja and Geron.
That's going to be where it is. Thank goodness for subtitles, but I often play late at night and have to keep it kind of turned down. So I was like, well, I don't know. I can't correct you this time. I do want to say we kind of did a dumb here, and we reviewed the sequel before we reviewed the original game. I thought that Memoria was first for the Dark Eye Chronicles. We were given it first.
What did we review first?
We haven't. This is Memoria.
Okay.
And Memoria is actually the second one.
Is Chains of Sadanov the first?
Apparently, yeah. And I was like, I was playing Memoria. I was like, I have fucking no idea what they're talking about half the time. And I was very confused and like trying to piece the story together. And then I got to looking it up and I was like, well, that fucking explains why. Because I missed Jaren's entire backstory. I don't know what's going on.
Interesting. I just passed them to you in the order we got them.
Yeah, and that's why I was like, okay, this is the order they go in, clearly, because the devs aren't going to give us this shit out of order, right? No.
I honestly didn't know the two games were related. I just know that they released the same day. We will be talking about the other Dark Eye title on a future episode. I'm not sure which one, but we only had time to get one in on this episode, so...
I should be able to have it for next week, but I did kind of laugh about it because I was playing. I was like, really fucking don't know what's going on. And I was really confused. But it was just, we played them out of order. I hope that Sorry. When I play the other one, yeah, I hope when I play the other one that I'm just like, oh, it all comes together.
I hope that the other one is the third game. So you still have no reference to anything.
I already looked it up. It's the first one. I'm prepared. I'm good. I was like, I'm just going to double check because I'm pretty sure there's four in this series. And the other two don't have the Dark Eye in their name either. And I was like, great. I'm going to be all kinds of fucked up in this because I'm one of those people who's like, you can't play the second till you play the first. And so when I realized what was going on, I was like, God. Damn it. I fell into my own hole here.
Why didn't you tell me? We could have shuffled things.
Well, because I figured I didn't have any other reviews that were going to be worth talking about that I could like have done in its place. And I was like, well, at least I've already done it. So we might as well just talk about it.
Oh, God. Well, tell us about the game.
I mean, it's a point and click. It's a Daedalic adventure. If you've played any of their other ones, if you've ever heard me talk about my favorite games literally anywhere, you'll know that I love Silence: The Whisper World 2. That is another Daedalic title, and I've played a lot of their other point and clicks, trying to fill that beautiful high fantasy vibe that Silence had, and none of the other ones really quite clicked the same way, and pulled me into their world the way Silence did until this one. Memoria, the Dark Eye universe as a whole, but Memoria specifically for this review, just it had that really beautiful illustrated fantasy aesthetic. It had really well rounded out characters, especially the female characters, which we all know I can be really harsh about, and how they're portrayed. The writing was really well done. And I, for a few minutes, I was like, you could have just told me I was back in the Silence world and I would have believed you. Which is high praise. It really is high praise coming from me. Because Silence meant that much to me, that just anything that even put me back in feeling like I could be back in that world for a few minutes was a good thing. As the summary said, basically you're playing as two different characters. They don't interact with each other, but their stories intertwine. So for part of the game, you have control of Jaren, and he has magical abilities. As you puzzle your way through his story and come across various items and different people in the narrative, you'll unlock additional magic spells that he can use. I will say that the actual navigation for the inventory slots and using the spells can be a little clunky to get used to. Even with having played fully through it, I was still really frustrated with using the controller for the point and click. And point and click games, like, either they're ported to a controller really well or they're just not. And Memoria, unfortunately, falls into that just not territory. But it's a case of, in order to interact with things, so there will be a circle over something that you can interact with, and then you use your left thumbstick to highlight it, and then you'll use a face button to either combine it with an item or to look at it or to speak with somebody or to pick it up or whatever. Pretty standard point and click stuff. However, if you want to actually manage the inventory or do a spell, spells are tied to the triggers. And then the inventory is tied to the D-pad. Now, you can just shuffle through the inventory at a glance by pressing left or right on the D-pad. If you want details on an item at a glance, you can press up on the D-pad. But if you actually want the inventory to come up full screen, you have to press down on the D-pad. And then you can shuffle things around. You can combine inside the inventory. You can perform spells on the items that you have inside the inventory. That doesn't sound overly complicated, right? It sounds like, fine, your inventory is tied to your D-pad. I cannot tell you how many times I was in the middle of trying to cast a spell or something or find an item I needed to interact with, and I would be constantly pressing up, trying to get the inventory to come up on the screen. And my head is just like, your quick glance is at the bottom, press up to enlarge it. That seemed like the logical process, but it's down. It's down to make it come up. And I can't do it. My brain just breaks over it. I don't know why I struggled with this so much, but I did.
Proud of you.
I would have liked to have been able to change that. That would have been good. I can't remember. There was something I played recently that had key bindings, but I don't think this was it. I should have wrote down if there were key bindings or not. If there were, I probably would have changed them. So I'm assuming since I'm bitching about it, not changing it, they probably weren't there. I do remember that there was controller sensitivity, which is all well and good. You do move around the characters within the environments. So it can, you know, and sensitivity is always important for that, but I don't remember there being any other options beyond that. Anyway, yeah, absolutely beautiful, really well-written story. Just my only beef was that the controller binding could have been a little better, but otherwise I really enjoyed Memoria. For the first time in a long time, I felt like I got to feel a little bit like I was back in one of my favorite worlds, even if it was just because of the aesthetics.
Nice. So $20, yeah. Your official verdict?
I do think it is absolutely worth it, and I do want to give it a buy it. there's definitely enough there to justify it. I do also want to point out that if you're curious, the game is currently on sale on Steam until February 4th for $1.99.
Damn.
Yes, both games. Both of the Dark Eye games are currently $1.99 on Steam. So if you're like, oh, I don't know if I want to play it, you know, for 20, here's your chance. Go hit it up for $2 and see if you like it. And then
I've noticed Daedalic has like crazy sales on other platforms, but never on Xbox. Not on and Xbox. I don't know why. Like I'll see Deponia for $1 on PlayStation.
I think I have seen Silence down for $2 and $3 a couple times because I've always been like, grab that shit up. So yeah, they don't mark them down on Xbox near as much as at least as far as Steam, because I was really surprised to see it was $1.99.
Yeah. All right, and we'll keep you up to date with the other Dark Eye game, either next episode or next week, one of the two.
Hopefully, the whole story makes sense once I get the part.
But next game to talk about is Olesia, developed by Skeleton Crew, published by Devolver Digital, released January 28th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $14.99. Olesia is a game about Faraday's quest, a man shipwrecked and then trapped in the mysterious country of Terraphage. Armed with a legendary harpoon, he and other castaways try to leave this hostile country to return to their homelands. Oh, what is this game about?
It's kind of cruel when a game summary is like, you're armed with this legendary harpoon, and then you have to like go through multiple dungeons to get the harpoon. And you're like, don't sell me on the harpoon being the best part, like the best weapon and how it's all legendary, if it's going to take me 97 days to get it. Also, it didn't take 97 days. I've only had the game for like 2 weeks. So, I did exaggerate a little. I had to clear that up because I don't want somebody to be like, it took 97 days to get the harpoon, because somebody would. Alicia is the story of Faraday. Look, if Jacob can ramble about all kinds of shit, I'm fine.
I don't like when he does it.
Okay. I'm still doing a better job than he did.
True. Very true.
So there's no complaints here.
I'm just going to quit the show soon. I give up.
I was back on a roll and you interrupted me. Faraday ends up shipwrecked in this mysterious land. Everything is very minimal. I will just go right out of the gate right now and be honest, and I really just do not like this art style. I have bitched about it a million times in the past. I'm sorry to the devs. I know that it's hard work to make a game look good when it has this minimal low pixel art aesthetic going for it. It's just not my thing. It's fine for what it is. And I do think they do a fairly decent job of adding in quite a bit of detail to the environment, despite using the low pixel art method. It's just that it's not my thing. I will say that I think, though, that the art style chosen for the game adds to the difficulty element in it, because a lot of the rooms that you're going through as you're going through these different islands, they start to look very samey. And that's because they only have a few color palette options you can really go with to kind of mix things up, right?
No.
There's only so much you can do when you're sticking with this 8-bit minimal pixel thing. And so it's like, I get it, but I got lost far more times than I'd like to admit to. And to make it a little worse, you can't always backtrack. So if you're like pressed in a position to go one way or another, I never felt like the path I was going was the right one. I always felt like I was just going to go a little bit to see if I liked what I was getting into. And if I didn't, I would backtrack. And then I would hit a wall and be like, oh, you can't backtrack. And then I'd be like, well, now I don't even know where the fuck I am anymore. I was always lost, always confused, and never certain if what I was doing was what I was supposed to be doing to actually move the story. And yet somehow, despite it, the story did keep going. But then that just magnified the fact that I felt like I had missed a whole lot. The story plays out, and that's great. But I'm like, were there collectibles? Were there weapons I didn't find? Were there other things I didn't find? Can I do that again? And eventually, yeah, you learn that you can go back and do it again. But I still just constantly felt like there was something more that I had lost. Maps are good things. I'm a big fan of maps, and that helps with the lost feeling. But I was just lost. And the game just does not care. It wants you to go back and re-explore, wants you to go grind materials, wants you to go find things and do everything over and over. But it just felt like more of a frustration than was really worth it. I think that drive to have you go back and replay the different islands was almost felt like padding sometimes, because the game is short. And if it weren't for having to go back and try to see what you missed and then end up realizing that you went the same way you went the last time because you're a dumb and you do things out of habit, then that's that it just felt like it was padding to force me to do things over and over again. I will also say I feel like I'm complaining a lot for a game I actually did kind of like. Don't get me wrong here. But I feel like the actual combat that I entered into while exploring the islands never quite prepared me for the actual boss battles. And so then I just spent a whole bunch of time getting my ass kicked. Because I hadn't quite learned all the best ways to use the weapons I had found. That said, the fluidity of, is that even a word? It's going to be today. The way the character moves, Faraday's movements are really awesome. I did feel like the combat was smooth and comfortable. And the way that they animated his movements was really cool. Except for when he's going up ladders. I don't know what it was about the ladders, but I constantly felt like he had like rocks in his pockets when you were trying to go up the ladders. It bothered me. But beyond that, really solid adventure game. I know it sounds like I'm complaining a lot about it, but beyond having a map, that was really the only thing that bothered me. Everything else was just kind of quality of life stuff that could kind of be smoothed over in the end, you know?
Yeah. Well, $15, your official verdict.
I'm going to roll with a try it. I don't hate it. I know it sounds like I just spent this whole review bitching. I don't hate it, but I think the fact that I do have some minor complaints means I enjoyed it enough that I would like to see it be polished out to be what it could be. And a map wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, maps are important in games.
Yes. Don't force people to rely on their memories, because some of us don't have those. We're old.
Oh, man. All right. Next game to talk about is called Sword of the Necromancer, developed by Grimoireo of Games, published by Grimoireo of Games, Jandusoft, and Gameseer Ventures. Released January 28th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $14.99. What would you do to bring back someone you love? Sword of the Necromancer is a dungeon crawler action RPG with roguelike elements where you can revive your defeated enemies to make them fight alongside you. Turn your foes into allies using the forbidden powers of the Sword of the Necromancer and reach the dungeon's depths. Our friend Serlina covered this one, wrote in a review, and this is what she's got to say. Hey there, SML friends and fam, it's your girl Serlina, and for this week I'm reviewing Sword of the Necromancer for the Xbox One, developed by Grimoireo of Games and published by Grimoireo of Games, Jandusoft, and Gameseer Ventures. Like, why? I say that stuff. Why does everyone include that? Anyway,
because it's padding.
True. Makes it look longer. That's what she said. Sword of the Necromancer is an action adventure roguelike extravaganza that has you playing as Tama, a bandit who has lost the love of her life in Coco and is willing to do anything to get her back. Let's get on to the review. Story-wise, Sword of the Necromancer is quite excellent. The way the game reveals the story to you is through cutscene flashbacks with text. They're fully voiced, which made me incredibly happy. You learn about Tama and her life before and after meeting Coco. It's quite awesome. You can also revisit any of the cutscenes when you're at the altar in the beginning of the game through Tama's journal. It's a beautiful story to watch unfold, so I hope y'all pay attention. Let's talk about the gameplay. I have to admit, I'm not the hugest fan of roguelike games. I enjoy playing them, but it upsets me that I die, and I die several times, that I have to start over. Not my bag. That being said, I didn't mind this mechanic all that much in this game. It's probably because I really wanted to see the story, and I'm not that bad at the game. I'm not going to say it's easy, but it's fairly challenging. It's hard enough that you'll make mistakes and die, but once you learn how the game works, you can get through the levels with relative ease. The main weapon of the game is the actual sword of the Necromancer, which gives you the power to revive dead enemies. With this power, you're able to use those enemies as allies, sort of. These revived enemies become usable in your inventory that you can deploy at any time, but you can't control them. They'll attack your enemies indiscriminately, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's something to keep in mind when using them. While we're on the subject of inventory, you only have access to 4 slots. You must have the Sword of the Necromancer with you, so you only have 3 slots to play with. You can also find other items like weapons, potions, amulets, so you'll really have to juggle here. You can store your unused items in your chest back at the altar, but getting back there is a bit tricky. Okay, remember that this is a roguelike, so when you die, you lose all your stuff and start from scratch. Well, if you choose to leave a dungeon on your own, you'll still lose all your levels and stuff. You'll have to restart from level 1, but you'll keep half of your levels. Oh, you'll have to restart from stage 1, but you'll keep half of your levels. Okay. The only way to avoid this is to have an escape rope or use the teleporter that only generates when you defeat a boss. That's cool and all until you realize that your storage chest also spawns at the end of the boss fight and you can only use one. You've been warned. Some other interesting notes are the graphics. They aren't bad. I enjoy the 16-bit look and the cutscenes are a delight. The music is also pretty good. Finally, the game comes with a manual, which makes me pleased as punch because they missed the days of games with actual manuals. Granted, the manual's online and you'll have to download it, but we're not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. Why would you want that manual? Because it contains codes for items that will help or hinder you in the game. Having trouble getting past the boss, there's a code for an awesome weapon or two. Think everything is too easy? A certain code and item will ramp up the difficulty for you real quick. I appreciate manuals and it makes me feel loved. Sword of the Necromancer is available right now on all platforms for $14.99, and should you buy it? Yes, you should absolutely buy this game. It's beautiful, groundbreaking story. The action and the gameplay are on point, and there's just enough challenge here to have you cursing everything you see. Step into Tama and Coco's world. You won't regret it. You regret not taking that one, Cole?
A little bit.
Did it sound good?
Yeah.
It is good.
When I heard roguelite, and I was like, oh, I passed up a roguelite. That hurts.
You know what you didn't pass up, though?
What?
Project Starship X, developed by Panda Indie Studio and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released January 27th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $9.99. In this roguelite shooter, you'll take the role of a tentacled yet hip Swagthulu as you crash kill comical abominations in flashy 16-bit style. With multi-purpose dodge mechanics and tons of crazy pickups, you'll be able to crash your ship straight through the enemy and emerge unscathed. Project Starship X celebrates genre conventions by turning them upside down. Cole, tell us about this one.
I almost forgot I played this. Not in a bad way, but holy shit. You said it, and I was like, what one was that again?
Yeah, this is why we discuss what you're reviewing before we review. Yeah,
the day before, and that's plenty of time for me to forget.
True.
Because the problem is sometimes that we get the game and I load it up at like 3 a.m. and then it's something that can be done kind of quickly or kind of short, and then I don't touch it for the next week. And then I'm like, what? I played 97 other games before since you gave me this one. What is this? Goodness gracious. Project Starship X is a shmup. That's the long and short of it. It plays like a vertical shooter shmup, and you have a spaceship. You have a couple of different characters you can pick from. They have a couple of different perks or benefits to them. I always pick the girl. I will say, I have an odd question. I remember every shmup I play that has a female space pilot names her Gwen. And I feel like this is a reference to something I don't understand.
I don't know.
Like, every time I see it, I'm like, There's another female space pilot in a shmup named Gwyn, and I don't know why. Here we are. There's always a Gwyn. Maybe I played this one before it was the remake version.
And there maybe was a, that's a why Project I'm like, Starship.
Did I play it, though? I don't know. I very much remember playing other games, multiple other shmups with female characters named Gwyn. Either way, I chose Gwyn. I didn't give a fuck about the other ones. I was like, whatever the case is, I'll make the female character work and I'll roll with it because that's what I do. I play with the female characters. Representation matters. So basically, it's just a vertical shooting shmup. You do have the ability to do what's called an X maneuver. And this like allows your ship to kind of warp in a diagonal. It's handy for avoiding bullets because this is a fucking shmup with all of its bullet helliness and there's just damage and terrible things everywhere that's trying to kill you. The plus side is that it also gives you a few invincibility frames and you can actually kind of get in quite a bit of trouble and then just jump your way out of it. And I like that. I like the ability of just hitting a button and not having to worry for a few seconds. I will say I couldn't tell you a damn thing that happened other than the game was constantly just throwing shit at me until it was throwing zombie Hitler in a floating eyeball at me. And then later there was a space crab. The bosses are weird. I have no fucking idea what's going on or why. It's all very bright. It's all very flashy. Kudos to them for having a night mode, though, that actually kind of like puts a filter over everything and dims down the flashiness. Very on board for that, because sometimes I do have trouble with flashing lights. And especially where I play shit in the middle of the night. I was like, oh, that is a good thing. And that should definitely be in more shmups. Also, they let you turn off the scan lines. We all know how much I fucking hate scan lines.
Yep.
So fuck yes for letting me turn that off. The film grain scan lines. I hate all that shit. So I am very happy that there were options for all of that. Like I said, it's one of those games that it's just so odd that you just kind of fall into it and you're like, this is a thing that's happening every few minutes. And you just kind of have to recalibrate your brain to accept that whatever's on the screen is just, that's what's going on right now.
No.
And then you don't even get too long to adjust to that because once you die, you have to start all over from the beginning and it's changed. It's never the same. Because however how far you have made it, this is hard to explain. Like, if you've made it to where you've beaten zombie Hitler for whatever reason, and he's in his space eyeball thing, if you beat him, then the next time when you play the level, it's going to have different enemies in a slightly different layout. I actually got a little too far for my own good because, like, I had gotten the habit of beating up to the third boss, and I was like, "Yeah, I fucking got this," and I'm like in a good rhythm and pattern. And then I beat the third boss. And now everything is different and I don't have that rhythm and pattern and I don't understand how to get it back.
Weird.
So it's really, really kind of odd the way that it changes. And I'm not sure that I'm particularly a fan of it, but I think if you know that you're getting good at it and it's a game that you're going to want to sit down and like really grind out and get into, I think that could keep things fresh. But for me, it's more of a, I don't feel like I'm going to progress because I never learn it if it keeps changing kind of thing.
Yeah.
But
I'll say overall, it's not hard for achievements.
No, I've got a couple I haven't got yet, but I've got most of them and I'm not mad about it. I think I've got more than I usually get in a shmup, so I'm not mad.
I wasn't even paying attention and I got all but one achievement on my first playthrough. And the one I didn't get was for doing the X maneuver 100 times in one playthrough because I didn't do it that much.
Yeah, it does take a it does take a lot to like learn the X maneuver.
Yeah, props to East Asia Soft for doing something different with the achievement list though, and making you earn like everything in one playthrough instead of just cumulative, so you could get it super easy. You got to earn this one a little bit.
Unfortunately. I just want that those last couple achievements and be like, yeah, I did that. Bye.
Well, $10, your official verdict.
$10. I think it's plenty fun for what it is. I think it's a solid shmup for $10. And it can be a little hard, but it could be worse too, so I'm not mad about it. I'm good with a buy it.
Cool. Yeah. All right, next up is Caves and Castles Underworld, developed by Alowar and Amigami, published by Chili Dog Interactive, released January 29th on Xbox One for $4.99. Find adventure beyond your imagination and riches untold as you descend into the caves beneath an ancient castle. Match gems to remove obstacles, collect keys and unlock new passages, and build your strength as fast as you can to break through barriers in Caves and Castles Underworld, a sometimes relaxing, sometimes heart-racing match 3 game. Paul, tell us about Caves and Castles.
I don't think this game ever made my heart race. I will say I really love these match 3 gen games, and we don't have enough of them. So I am not mad at this one in any way, shape, form, or fashion. And the fact that they turned around and blended the match 3 gameplay with a town building. I only stopped to think of, like, if this team had all the resources, what they really could have done, because the town building is a little on the, there's no like resource management or anything for it. You go into the dungeons and like it's laid out like a maze. And whenever you come across some kind of like barrier in your way in the maze, then you play the gym game and you get gold, and you don't, most of them aren't timed. There are a couple that are, but even then they're so forgiving that like you can just kind of sit and rack up the gold just from making moves and not even have to beat the puzzle if you don't want to. Because even if you come to an impasse where you don't have any moves left, it just reshuffles the board. There's no punishment for anything. It's all very much meant to be relax and chill and go through it. And I am 100% on board for that. So once you go through the different caves and explore it to your little heart's content, try to find all the chests or whatever goodies there might be in there. You rack up your gems. You can also get essence, which then you just turn around and sell for more money. The essence kind of feels like a missed opportunity. Like there could have been a little more resource management with it. Instead, they just have you sell it. At that point, they should have just gave me more money and been done with it. Then you use the gold to build whatever's needed in the town at the time. This again is where I am like, if the dev team had a little more resources, maybe they could have done a little more here. Because it just pops up and it's like, hey, you found some animals and they need food. And then you give them 2,000 gold and they build a barn. You never like walk around and explore the village and choose what you want to build. It's just whatever pops up, you go and get the money for it and then you buy it and then it moves on to the next thing while it's being built. I think there was a lot of potential, but it's also just a $5 game.
Yeah.
You know, so it does have those kind of limitations. And now the only thing that I can complain about is that I'm just sad knowing like all the things they could have done and all the things I would want them to do with this kind of genre mashup that I didn't get. But for what is there, then I go, well, yeah, but it was solid and I played through it for, I don't know, an hour or two, whatever it took me to get all the achievements and beat the story in it. Wasn't much. You know, it was easy. It was relaxing and it scratched an itch. It might have awoken a new itch that will never get scratched.
Oh, no.
Because I just now really want like a super in-depth
Carnage saying you need a hidden object puzzler with a match 3 minigame.
That would be good. I wouldn't be mad.
Shoot artifacts and email. Make it happen.
Yeah. Please, somebody please do this for me. But for what is there, $5, then I think it's solid. It's one of those, I like to call them palate cleansers. And yeah. I think it does that well. I have no complaints.
And like all Chili Dog interactive games, there's a cheat code.
Is there really?
Yep.
Who the fuck needed a cheat code for this game anyway? I popped the achievements on accident.
There's three different cheats you could do. One is you could add gold, one is you could add essence, and the other destroys everything on the board.
Wow.
So it's basically instant victory.
Wow.
Yeah. So, do it legit, kids. Do it legit.
It's so easy that I don't know how you couldn't just do it legit.
Anyway, one final game to talk about with you is called Vera Blank Ghost in the Castle, developed by Winter Wolves Games, published by Rat and Lake Games, released January 26th on PS4, 27th on Xbox One, 29th on the Switch for $4.99. The town's legendary ghost seems like nothing more than a quaint story, but a string of murders and suicides all point to the castle's ghost, and locals are getting scared. Will you be able to solve the mystery? Cole, tell us about this one.
So just like the previous Vera Blank game, this one is a visual novel type of comic thing going for it. Does have a little more gameplay option than your typical visual novel. There are many games, although if you're an achievement horn, you don't give a fuck about that. You can turn those off and you just automatically succeed. It's just like, that's one way to go about it, I guess.
How do you beat the game? Remove the game.
Basically. You still do have to go through the days, just like the first Vera Blank game, you had to like make it through the whole week. And there's shit like you can make bad choices and it will kill you. And then you have to start all over again. So that is something to take into consideration. It even without the mini games, it can still be, if you're following along with the story and trying to read everything, you can still fuck up. If you're using a guide and you just set everything to skip, then it's like congratulations on your 10-minute achievement collection, I guess. For this one, as opposed to the last one we played, was a werewolf story. And I'm just going to be honest, it wasn't my favorite in the visual novels that we played. Rat of Lake is definitely really some that were better than the Vera Blank werewolf one. I will say the ghost story in this one is also definitely better than the werewolf one. But we do still have the issue of Vera Blanc is very heavily sexualized, and a lot of this is just an excuse to look at her boobs. And that is magnified by the fact that like there's some times where she's literally just in a pink nightie with her underwear, and her arm is draped across her nipples so that you can't see them. Because modesty, I guess. I don't know. At this point, they might as well just put little stars over her nipples and call it a day. Also, I think I don't remember if, I'm not sure if in the first one she was like 16. Anyway, her shit is she can read minds. And that helps you make your decisions and how to move about the story. Sometimes you need to read people's minds. I got Aki's attention. I'm a little concerned because I did say she was 16 in the previous game. Here we are. And then you basically move around. Yeah. Do with that information what you will. More concerned about the devs since they haven't aged her up at this point. I don't remember if they even mention her age anymore. The whole premise is she had brain cancer. She was like the prodigy child of some special doctor, and now she's can read minds because of the treatment to get rid of her brain cancer. It's a very odd concept, and they don't really dive too much into it. They're just like, yeah, she's here and she's reading minds and solving this ghost mystery now. And that's that. it does fine. It's certainly better than the last one. I don't love them though. I think if you're gonna pick one of these up, they're better to be picked up like knowing that they're kind of awkward and odd, and they definitely show their age, because they were this is like a 10-year-old game that's just been ported. So it shows in the art style. It's not the best. I don't want to sit here and bitch about the art, but it's not my favorite.
You being an art snob?
I know. At least it's not pixel art, but it's just all looks. It looks like it was drawn in paint. That said it there. It's fine, I guess. It works for what it does, but it is definitely a little cringy and not my favorite in the visual novel department. It's fine.
Well, $5, your verdict?
It's fine. For $5, it's pick it up for achievements, or if you really are just jonesing for a visual novel about reading minds and ghosts and trying to solve a ghost story, but it's not something that I would like be fiending for the next version of at the same time. You know, it's a solid fuck it, why not? $5.
We know the achievement hunters are just getting this for the achievement anyway.
There's either it caters to two fields, right? The achievement hunters and the ones who want to see a big-breasted blonde in her 90. And I guess that's fine. Like, I love good ghost stories and stuff. And it was just like, never was I like, oh, this is a really good ghost story. It was like, okay, that's just the path it's taking me down this time, huh? You know? It just existed. What about horny achievement hunters? Get bonked. Go to horny jail.
Oh my god. All right. We got one more review to take care of. That's with Tim. I don't know if you're going to be there for it, so I don't know how to end this.
I don't know.
We'll just splice right here and something will happen, so we'll fucking figure it out.
Something happens.
All right, and something happened, and now Tim's here. Tim, how are you doing?
Hey, it happened. I'm here.
It did happen. Paul talked about it. It happened. And boom, it's you. How you doing?
All right. It's a long week. A lot of work. A lot of working on hours when I don't normally work.
That is not fun.
Hence why I'm here, isolated from everyone. I've been quarantined.
I'm so used to like having everybody on at the same time that it's weird to record something separately now. But now that you're here and it's just us... We could talk about the important news.
It used to be like the show, right? I know you're trying to segue, but it like used to be like everybody was recording individually, and now like we have these big
party casts. I love them.
Yeah.
I think they're more fun that way.
Yes. That's normally how people podcast, Joe, is they get more than one person at a time.
Yeah. Well.
And usually shenanigans ensue.
I try.
Gotta let Purnell get through reviews without heckling every now and then, though. Poor guy.
I enjoy your heckling.
Yeah, me too.
You know what else I enjoy? The goddamn Royal Rumble. Which is this weekend, Wrestlecast time. It's been a while since we've talked WWE, but it's the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
And everybody loves the Rumble.
Yeah. I mean, I've literally not watched a WWE show since like July. Maybe I watched some of SummerSlam. I don't remember. I think I might have had SummerSlam on, like, off to the side. Because after that was, like, my last week that I was subscribed to the network. It was, like, over course of the summer that I was just, like, not fucking watching at all. I just did not have time to watch anything or interest, and I didn't. So I stopped. And this, you know, between SummerSlam and the Royal Rumble is also always the worst stretch of WWE content for a year. Like... Because they're not doing anything. Like, true. They don't give a shit about Survivor Series. So it's like, that is the time of the year, no disrespect to the Usos, but that is the time of year when you have an Uso challenging for a title, you know? That program was good.
Main event, Jey Uso, man.
Yeah. But, like, this is the time of the year when you do shit like that, I guess. But you don't usually just see those kind of random... pairings around, you know, you start building big matches, you know, you start to get the hype up for the Royal Rumble, then it's the road to WrestleMania for 3 months. And then you realize you forgot to build for WrestleMania, and then you have to do it all in the last 2 weeks beforehand. And you're like, ah, oh, shit, we forgot. Oh, no.
Because there's a pay-per-view 2 weeks beforehand.
The Royal Rumble is always fun, no matter what, because it is just, it is the best, you know, wrestling match. I mean, it's not like the best wrestling match, but it's the most fun to watch every year because you never know what's going to happen.
Battle Royals are always fun. Always.
Yeah. Well, you need the staggered entrances. You need you don't know who's gonna show up. Though I guess there's gonna be less of that this year because they're less big about the surprises without a crowd.
No.
So
I hope there's still one or two surprises, just a couple of people.
There probably will be.
Make it. That's why. Oh my god.
That's why it was just like, oh yeah, Edge is gonna be in the Rumble and not like Edge showing up at the Rumble and you know getting that big pop, getting the big pop.
Yeah. But Rumble, who do you think's going to win?
I don't fucking know. I've been watching this shit. all I can do is infer from the dirt sheets that I was hearing the rumor of Goldberg was going to win the Rumble, which was terrible, a terrible, terrible idea. But now he's wrestling Drew, which is fine, I guess.
It'll be fine if he puts over Drew. If Goldberg takes the title,
Goldberg wins. Any situation where Goldberg wins now is just the worst case scenario. I think that'll be fine, and Goldberg will have some other fucking match at WrestleMania, I guess. They need to put Roman and Goldberg and Edge in a match together, and then they all just... The bell rings, they run at each other and all try to spear at the same time and knock each other out. Three-way count out, it's over.
Christian in there too with his awful spear.
I like Daniel Bryan winning the Rumble. Would make good of the Rumble that he should have won like 6 years ago.
True.
When Blutista won the Rumble. That would be good. Yeah, I really don't know what's going on with the women at all. It's like, I guess
me neither, man. Charlotte, and I watch this shit every week.
Yeah, Charlotte is in the Rumble. Maybe Charlotte will win. But she won last year. But I mean, it's
Charlotte. So
Charlotte wins. My assumption is that they'll just have, because she's tag champs with Asuka, she'll probably turn on Asuka, or Asuka will turn on her because they think people like Charlotte more than Asuka. And she'll just take the title off Asuka again at WrestleMania, and I'll be fucking sad. Maybe Bianca Belair, maybe what's her face that Charlotte ruined last year at WrestleMania. Can't remember her name. It's terrible. I can't remember her name right
now. The worst part is I know exactly who you're talking about, and all I could think of is Toni Storm, and it's not Toni Storm.
It's not Toni
Storm. Rhea Ripley. There it is.
There you go. Thank you. I knew it was two R's, but I like. The name Ruby Riott is in front of me, and it wouldn't move from that. So, yeah, other than that, like, it's like I think
Rhea Ripley has a good chance of winning. I would like to see her win and move up to main roster and not be treated like shit. But I guess,
Make up for last year's transgressions.
Yeah. So that won't happen.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I just don't know. Like I said, I haven't been watching, so I don't know anything that's been going on. And we'll see, I guess. But it'll be fun no matter what, because it always is.
Yeah, it should be a good time. And I love the fact that you asked me if I was going to be watching.
Yeah.
Like, you came to me with this one. You haven't watched in months, and you're like, hey, are we doing the Rumble?
Yeah.
You're goddamn right we're doing the Rumble.
Goddamn right we're doing the Rumble.
You know what else we're doing? We're doing a review. We got one more game to talk about. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, let's say I am.
Sure, why not? Final game to talk about tonight is called Heaven's Vault, developed and published by Inkle, released January 28th on the Switch for $17.99. When a talented roboticist goes missing, archaeologist Alyssa Elosra, I don't know, her robot assistant Six, are sent onto the rivers of the nebula to find him. Their search soon has them piecing together an ancient trail of artifacts, inscriptions, and lost knowledge that leads to thousands of years in the past. Tim, what is Heaven's Vault?
What is Heaven's Vault? This is kind of like an adventure, exploration, mystery, adventure game type dealio. If you know, look at a trailer or... Yeah, I guess you kind of really need to see a trailer to get, like, the full effect of the visual style, which has, like, 2D character art. So, you know, they look like, I don't know, they're pulled out of, like, they almost look rotoscopes, but they're not. But, yeah, they have, like, there's this 2D character art that is over, like, 3D spaces, polygonal spaces, and they're, yeah, it's an interesting look to it, in just kind of the way it superimposes them over there, and like the way the characters are animated, which they don't have like a ton of frames of animation intentionally, that, you know, they're not supposed to look like very smooth walkers around here. But I think having that style, and also they often don't have feet, like they were drawn by Rob Liefeld in the 90s because he didn't know how to draw feet, so that way it lets them move around and kind of better gel with the environments than they might otherwise look, you know, like a little bit awkward. But sometimes like things still are a little bit awkward. It's weird. Like the way, like usually in dialogue scenes, like the way things pace out, like it feels like the camera will kind of like jump quickly between lines of dialogue, or from like one angle to another, like a close up to like more of a medium shot, that can be like a bit jarring. It's weird. There is a toggle in the options to set like the pace of the game, which I assumed had to do with like kind of text speed and the like speed of the camera movement and how fast shots were advancing from one to another. But even with like, I yanked that down to the lowest setting, and it still felt sometimes like in the dialogue, like they were just like running through it like so fast. Like I wouldn't have some of the game. Some scenes have voice acting and some do not. And some have kind of like a partial, like, oh, they'll say like two or three words, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, especially in the scenes where it was like, I just had to read and sometimes this a lot of times came up in like with like interstitial dialogue where you're just like walking around with your robot pal and they're like just bantering back and forth. It just felt like sometimes like their text would come up and go away. Like I could barely keep up with it. So that was kind of the presentation looks good in moments and is cool in moments, but sometimes just kind of like the direction and speed of it, just kind of threw things off, I guess, in the moment. But anyways, so yeah, you are this archaeologist who is set to go find this dude who disappeared, out in something that is like an approximation of space. Like it doesn't look like outer space. Like it's kind of like when you get on your ship to go between planets or driving around, it's more, it's a river that you navigate on and will have like forked branches. And, this is a part of the game I did not like. I know I'm like front loading with like a lot of negativity here, but I'll get to the good stuff. I promise. Yeah, so like you have like this galaxy map and you'll get out there with your ship and it's like a river and you kind of navigate and, you know, left, right, and there'll be forks in the river and you have to, there will be like an arrow thing there to tell you which way you need to go if you're going towards a particular goal. But man, just flying around, I did not like a lot of the time. Like there would be character banter, but like you go back, I just don't like traversal for traversal's sake in games. It's one of the reasons I don't get along with the GTA games very well, because there's a lot of fucking just driving in those games to make things feel more, quote, realistic.
Yeah.
But the, yeah, like flying or navigating this craft was not particularly joyful. Sometimes, like, because, you know, the push of the river is sometimes pushing against you, and despite my best efforts, like, every now and then I'd, like, miss a turn. And there is a means, it does serve as a means eventually. I don't know whether you have to miss a turn like a couple times first, but it will eventually be like, hey, do you just want your robot to fucking drive you there? And I'll be like, yes, yes, please take the wheel, robot.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, robot, take the wheel and get me there, please. Cause this is not, this is not a good time. So, like, after that, like, just about every time I'd get in the damn ship, it was like, okay, go, go, you drive me. But, of course, then you get to some spots where it's like, you don't know, like, there isn't, like, an exact waypoint you're trying to get to. So you kind of just have to fly around searching for something in this swirling mass of storms and rivers and whatever. And I didn't like that part. I think I would have just preferred if it was just you just had a goddamn galaxy map and just picked a point and then went there.
I just got an achievement in a game and it just popped on my computer. That's hilarious.
Nice.
So that'll show up in the podcast.
Huh. How about that?
Achievement unlocked.
So, yeah, like, I get it that it's necessary in moments where it's like, oh, we lost track of him in this storm over here, so we gotta, like, search around to see if we can find something, but, like, most of the time it's just like, no, I just want to go from here to there, and that's it. Please and thank you. But anyways, so once you start investigating, you're investigating this shit. So that can take the form of conversations with people where you get multiple dialogue options to, extract information from them. You will find, there's items to find that you can use on different things in a classic adventure game fashion. What really kind of attracted me to wanting to give this game a shot is one of the central gameplay components. So you have, like, you know, your basic adventure, like, dialogue stuff and find item here and use item there, though there isn't, like, a overwhelming amount of that, is that you are, as an archaeologist, trying to translate an ancient language. So right off the bat in the game, they give you a pendant, I think it is the first thing they give you, which has some markings on it. And you're just basically taking a fucking guess as to what these mean, like, what these markings mean. And so you take, you know, your guess, and it's like, okay, well, I think this means this, and we'll see what kind of information I get later on. And as you find more instances of that, scripture, you start getting more clues as to what the symbols actually mean. And the game will give you, like, suggestions like, oh, well, this symbol is similar to this symbol, so they perhaps have a similar meaning. So, like, one of the early tells, or like, really obvious ones I ran into, was there was, like, a well in the middle of a village. So it's like, okay, I think one of these words means water. And obviously one of these words means water because there's water in the well. So it's like, okay, good. I know this means water, and I'm still kind of fuzzy on the other one. But okay, that's one word now that I'm pretty sure I know what it is. And as you go along, you find more and more stuff that has writing on it. And that was the most interesting part of the game for me. Go figure, the thing that I thought I'd be most interested in was the thing I was most interested in. but yeah, no, that was cool and rewarding. And it will tell you sometimes where it's like, okay, I have seen this symbol enough. I have enough information. I am, you know, 95% certain that this word means the thing that I thought it was. And it'll lock it in. And similar, sometimes it'll be like, it'll tell you, like, oh, I think I need to do more research on this one, or I don't think this one is quite right. So the game does, you know, give you little nudges here and there, so you're not just flying completely blind with trying to translate an ancient language. But it was particularly cool when I started, like, figuring out that, like, one set of symbols was, like, the pronouns for the language. That was a neat thing. So that, to me, was the most interesting and rewarding part of the game. And there's more of that, like, the deeper you get in. So that's good stuff.
The store page says that it has over 3,000 words to decipher.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, cause early, you know, it was kind of like only like a couple instances I was running into early on as it's like, I guess, setting up the stage for the story. But then, like, I got to this one location and there was just, like, stuff everywhere, and I'm like, okay, this is great. This is getting me interested in the game. But as you're going around, you're finding clues to different locations. Like, you start getting information like, oh, there seems to be, like, some kind of, like, an ancient dig site in this section of the galaxy, but you don't know where. And the more clues you find, the more it narrows it down. So it's pretty cool, and I think does a good job of, like, you know, pointing you in the right direction. Even though sometimes your robot is just like, anytime you find something, it's like, we need to go report this back to the professor now. And it's just like, no, you don't. No, you don't. I'm not going to drive all the way back there to tell her this. Like, that is no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go to this other place and get more information so I can have a bigger conversation with her next time. But yeah, that's the basic flow of the game is you're going place to place, doing some investigating, putting some ancient language together, finding clues, piecing together a mystery. The only downsides are that sometimes the it's not a pirate game. It's not a pun. That certainly navigating around the cosmos is janky and not the best part. And that sometimes, like, the presentation of the dialogue scenes is not the best. There was even one instance where, like, I found something, or I was, like, walking around and, like, a dialogue, forced dialogue popped up between me and my robot buddy. And it zoomed in on my character, and, like, there was, like, a wall in the way. So I was, like, looking at literally fucking nothing. So there's, like, janky moments like that break the immersion, I guess I'd say, that you're just kind of like, yeah, okay, there's a few odd things in this game. But overall, you know, like, the main thrust of the game, which is the investigating and adventuring and translating, is pretty good stuff.
So overall, $18 on it. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I think it's... With warts in mind, it is worth a purchase, I believe, because it is interesting. I don't think I've seen another game that really put, like, the language translation mechanic, like, at the forefront like this. Like, I feel like I've seen it in a couple places where that's been kind of a side questy thing, but this is much more central to the game and is much more of a bigger deal. And I think that makes it stand out. So if that sounds like something interesting to you, you are going to really dig this game, I think. But not like an overwhelming recommendation, but it's a recommendation.
Hey, it sounds cool to me. So I might have to check this one out. Sounds really interesting. I love the whole deciphering language thing. I remember in Final Fantasy X, how they had the, what was the language in Final Fantasy X?
Blitzball.
Yes,
Blitzball. All bad. That's
all bad language, and Blitzball. Yeah,
Blitzball. The language of Final Fantasy X is Blitzball.
Oh my god! All right, well, that is it for this episode. Made it through another one.
we made it. We survived.
You survived. You were in for the long haul. All 20 minutes of it.
mm-hmm.
But Royal Rumble this weekend. Any final words about the Rumble?
Fuck is that shit? I hope it's a blast.